Welcome to Journal Club for February 1st, 2025. I'm Malcolm Dix. If you drive to the outskirts of any major city, then turn and look back at downtown, you'll see the skyline, the outline where the buildings meet the sky. Imagine that you're staring at this skyline. It stretches from left to right of your field of view, like an x-axis. The buildings rise up in front of you on the y-axis. The skyline you're viewing, the silhouette, consists only of the buildings that are tallest from your perspective. That is, only the buildings that, for any given point on the x-axis, have the highest value on the y-axis. There might be shorter buildings just in front of these skyscrapers, but they're excluded from participating in the skyline because they are being what we call dominated by the taller buildings behind them. But if you move much closer to the buildings, your perspective would change, and so would the members of that skyline. Your perspective acts as a filter, and the skyline is not about the absolute heights of the buildings, it's about which buildings dominate the others given your filter at the moment. This is the concept behind a skyline query. You're usually going to see them referenced in terms of database calls, but they apply to other situations as well. In a skyline query, you're attempting to pull all the highest values or most optimal values for a given condition or filter. You may not have heard of a skyline query, but you've certainly experienced them as a user. Three quick examples. 1. Travel sites. Skyline queries help users find hotels or flights that may be cheapest or fastest, or offer an optimal balance of different goals. 2. E-commerce sites. Online stores use skyline queries to suggest products that dominate others in terms of price, user ratings, and delivery time. This helps customers make better informed decisions. 3. Real estate and rental listings. Property marketplaces use skyline queries to show homes that offer the best combination of price, location, and amenities, filtering out listings that don't stack up against the others. As you can see, skyline queries can vary from the quite simple, show me the cheapest flights to LAX, to quite complex, show me the most undervalued homes in commute distance to my office, in neighborhoods with the most optimal combination of walk scores, school districts, and good restaurants. When complexity creeps in, it's usually in the form of higher levels of dimensionality. That is to say, as tables add more columns and databases add more interrelated tables, complexity goes up. The more complex your data becomes, the more difficult it is and computationally expensive it is to run a skyline query. Even if you're just dealing with a single table with a few columns, it can be difficult to see how to perform a skyline query efficiently without just brute forcing your way through all the data. Luckily, this is such a common problem that a number of solutions and algorithms are already commonplace. We're going to dig into those in a moment, but the issue with those existing solutions, at least according to the authors of today's paper, is that they struggle either when data has high dimensionality or when it's partially incomplete. And in the real world, data is incomplete all the time. There are many cases where you'll have some columns or fields filled in for certain records in the database, but not for others. Real-world data is messy like that, so the authors of today's paper are proposing a new solution to skyline queries that takes that messiness into account. Let's take a moment to look at how the industry's standard solutions work first, and then we'll turn to the author's new solution to see how it's different. By the way, I'm about to say tuple a lot. I just happen to pronounce it tuple. Some people say tuple. I think it's a regional thing. I've heard both. I don't know. Anyway, BNL, the block nested loop. It's simple and popular. It uses a nested iteration where each tuple in the dataset is compared against others to determine whether it is dominated. This is done using a window buffer, which stores candidate skyline points while scanning through the dataset. Whenever a new tuple is read, it is compared against the existing candidates to see if it dominates any of them. If it does, they are removed, and if it doesn't, it gets discarded. The process continues until all tuples have been evaluated, leaving only non-dominated points. The problem here is that it's effectively a brute force, so it works, but it doesn't scale. DNC, divide and conquer. This uses recursive partitioning. It breaks the dataset into smaller subsets and computes local skylines independently before merging them to form the final skyline. It has a divide phase, where the data is split into subsets, and a conquer phase, where skyline points are computed in each of the subsets. This method is more effective in distributed and parallel computing environments because independent computations can be performed simultaneously. So you can spread the work across multiple cores or machines. That being said, the merging step can still be computationally expensive, especially in high-dimensional spaces. Index-based methods use spatial structures like B-trees, R-trees, and quad-trees to reduce unnecessary comparisons. Instead of performing a brute force scan, these methods use indexing techniques to retrieve promising skyline candidates efficiently. A common approach is sorted access, where tuples are retrieved in a specific order, for example, the best attribute values first, and progressively refined to identify non-dominated points. Another key technique is branch and bound, where portions of the dataset that cannot contribute to the skyline are pruned early. These kinds of methods significantly improve query efficiency and can even achieve sublinear performance in some cases. And they work particularly well when data is already indexed for other purposes. That being said, these methods too become inefficient in high-dimensional spaces. Additionally, the tree structures being used assume that every record has values for all attributes. When dealing with incomplete data, these methods break down because missing values disrupt ordering rules and search paths. A couple examples. In a B-tree, a node with missing attributes may not fit within the established indexing scheme at all. R-trees rely on bounding boxes, and these may struggle when a dimension is missing since it cannot determine the true extent of an object. It's for these kinds of reasons that the authors of this paper had to come up with an alternative. Their method addresses these issues by introducing the incomplete data weighted classification tree, IDWCT, which is specifically designed to handle missing attributes. Instead of storing direct attribute values for comparison, this tree structure assigns weight values based on whether an attribute is present or missing. A value of 1 indicates that the attribute is available, while a value of 0 indicates that it's missing. These weight values determine how data points are organized within the tree. Unlike BSTs, for example, which rely on numeric comparisons, IDWCT categorizes tuples based on their pattern of missing attributes, grouping together entries that have similar missingness patterns. The process begins by inserting each tuple into the tree. The root node contains all data tuples, and from here, branching occurs based on the presence or absence of attributes. Intermediate nodes store weight-based decisions rather than attribute values, ensuring that tuples with missing values are assigned correctly. The tree grows downward, with leaf nodes representing fully classified groups of tuples that share identical missingness patterns. Once classification is complete, the tree's indexing mechanism ensures that the data can be efficiently retrieved and processed. Since each leaf node corresponds to a distinct missing data pattern, skyline queries can be executed within each bucket separately, minimizing unnecessary dominance comparisons across tuples with incomplete attribute sets. One of the other key innovations here is the introduction of optimal virtual points, OVPs. In traditional skyline queries, each tuple is compared against all others to determine dominance relationships, but in an incomplete dataset, direct comparisons are inconclusive. OVPs resolve this by creating representative tuples that encapsulate the best observed values for each attribute within a given bucket. So instead of comparing each tuple against every other tuple, it first constructs OVPs for each bucket and uses them as reference points. If an OVP dominates a tuple, that tuple is discarded without further comparisons. This reduces the number of pairwise checks that are needed to compute the skyline, making the algorithm significantly more efficient. All in all, it's got much better computational complexity than BNL or DNC, and it scales with incomplete data better than index-based methods. At least in theory. But how did it do when they evaluated it? They tested the system on three types of data: a real-world dataset, movie lens, a synthetically generated dataset, and a road network dataset. They focused on four metrics: execution time, sensitivity to dataset size, impact of dimensionality, and the effect of missing data. The first experiment measured execution times across varying dataset sizes. The author's solution consistently outperformed the competing algorithms, particularly in larger datasets. The second experiment analyzed execution times across different dimensionalities. All methods slowed down as the dimensions increased, but the author's solution exhibited the least deterioration. The third experiment investigated the effect of missing data. They found that the author solution actually gained an edge from higher missingness levels, as its classification tree effectively organized tuples to handle it, whereas traditional methods failed to adapt efficiently to those kinds of datasets. Lastly, the authors examined accuracy and confirmed that their method maintained high scaling precision while avoiding unnecessary eliminations. Overall, the results validated their claims that this is a faster, more scalable, and more robust alternative for these kinds of scenarios. The key takeaway is this: even tried and true algorithms, algorithms that are in play across the industry, can be improved. When you're building products and adding features, you may encounter use cases and datasets that these algorithms simply weren't designed to be good at. Many times, it makes sense to use these off-the-shelf solutions anyway, but other times it doesn't. If you find yourself with the appetite and resources to try and define your own variant to existing algorithms, or rewrite the book entirely, you may just end up coming up with something that is demonstrably better. And if it's better for you, there's probably someone else in the industry that will benefit from the insight you gleaned while building it. Speaking of which, if you'd like to benefit from taking a deeper look at the algorithm and walking through their logic in more detail, I'd highly recommend that you download the paper. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. Hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.